Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, March 22nd, 2018. The South Sudan government reacts to new U.S. restrictions on oil companies.
The American position had never been clear, and for a regime change, when Nikki Haley said the government of Salva Kiir is no longer a reliable partner.
And some civil society activists say the new restrictions are good.
There is no clear and open transparency in the process of the management of these oil revenues, and it's something that the citizens are concerned about.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Government spokesman and information minister Michael Makuei says the U.S. restrictions on South Sudanese oil entities announced yesterday will weaken the Kiir administration. Makuei accused the Trump administration of working towards what he calls a regime change in Juba. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The United States announced yesterday it was slapping trade restrictions on 15 oil entities that are partially owned or run by the South Sudan government. The companies listed include the state-owned Nile Petroleum Corporation or NilePet and Dar Petroleum Operating Company, an oil and gas consortium led by the Chinese and Malaysian state-run companies. The restrictions also cover oil distributor Nyakek and Sons, Greater Pioneer Operating Company GPOC, Juba Petrotech Technical Services, Nigeria's Oranto Petroleum, and Sud Petroleum Operating Company. South Sudan's Ministry of Petroleum and the Ministry of Mining were also included. Government spokesman Michael Makuei told South Sudan in Focus the move is meant to cripple the government.
There is no doubt about that. The American position had never been clear, that they are for a regime change. And that is very clear. Now, they are working hard to ensure that the government is gone. So definitely it is a very clear move. The American has been very clear when Nikki Haley said the government of Salva Kiir is no longer a reliable partner to deal with. So if we are no longer a reliable partner, definitely it means that they have to go.
Nikki Haley is the U.S. permanent representative to the United Nations who visited South Sudan and met one-on-one with President Salva Kiir. The U.S. State Department says the companies listed are substantial sources of revenue for the government of South Sudan. Washington says anyone wanting to export or transfer items of American origin to the 15 South Sudanese entities must first obtain a license from the U.S. government. The State Department says it expects the South Sudan government and the armed opposition to fulfill their commitments to IGAD and the people of South Sudan by respecting the ceasefire of hostilities agreement allowing unimpeded humanitarian access and pursuing a peaceful settlement to the conflict. Makuei claims the restrictions are aimed at making the opposition superior to Salva Kiir's government.
That is their intention. They want to weaken the government so that it easily collapse. But the government will not collapse, is what I can say. If that is their plan, they will not get it that way.
Makuei claims there are a lot of interest groups in South Sudan, like the UN bodies, who leak information to the U.S.
There are people here in South Sudan who are doing that, and we know that, including the UN agency. There is nobody here who is free doing things at will. Nobody is here in South Sudan in good faith. Everybody here in South Sudan is out to serve particular interest.
The U.S. also called on regional bodies and the international community to support trade restrictions on South Sudanese oil entities, which the State Department says fuels the continuing violence in the country. The restrictions come at a time when South Sudan's oil production has doubled to about 290,000 barrels per day amid the country's economic crisis. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Still in Juba, some South Sudanese civil society activists say the U.S. decision to slap trade restrictions on 15 oil entities in South Sudan is a wake-up call for the government to end the war through peaceful negotiations. The activists say the Kidd administration must use the oil revenues to improve service delivery across the country. Nabil Biagio has this report for VOA from Juba.
Flora Francis, a peace-building officer with the Juba-based Organization for Nonviolence and Development, says the U.S. trade restrictions on 15 oil-related entities in South Sudan will pressure the government into ending the war.
People are really suffering. There is a lot which is going on, and the international community are not happy with what is happening in South Sudan. And unfortunately, the government is not taking serious steps toward addressing this national issue.
Francis says the U.S. move should serve as a wake-up call to President Kiir and his ministers.
Our government should be mindful that we are already losing the international partners, and they should be committed, they should show the world that they are committed to bring peace in this country.
Rajab Muhandis, executive director of the South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, says there is no doubt that the trade restrictions on South Sudan's oil entities will have severe consequences on oil production and sales on the international market.
This move by the United States to sanction institutions dealing with petroleum in our country is a very disastrous step for our country. It's the bad news for us as people of South Sudan.
The U.S. State Department says the 15 oil entities are a key source of revenue for the government of South Sudan, and that corrupt officials use the profits from oil to buy weapons and fund irregular militias which undermine the peace, security, and stability of the country. Muhandis says the government must manage the country's oil revenues more responsibly.
There is no clear and open transparency in the process of the management of these oil revenues, and it's something that the citizens are concerned about. All these challenges, concerns from citizens, concerns from the international community, present the need for the political leaders to see why they should change and do business differently.
Bonjiri Peter, executive director of the Juba-based Humanity South Sudan, says the Kiir administration must use oil money to invest in agriculture and improve service delivery for people across the country.
For you to convince people all over the world, you must have shift your directions into making sure that your money generating your income locally, it has to shift to providing services to the citizen, where the government diverts now all the funding from oil revenues to agriculture, to education, to health. And it will eventually have impact on the citizens.
The U.S. Department of State says the sanctions on oil companies are part of an ongoing effort to hold those who foment violence, commit human rights violations, and obstruct the peace process or engage in illicit financial activities accountable. The U.S. Department of State says the Trump administration is ready to take additional actions, including sanctions against individuals who threaten the peace and security of South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
A police officer in Juba shot and killed his wife before turning the gun on himself yesterday. Police spokesman says they are investigating what may have prompted the officer to storm a market at Gumbo suburb in Juba. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
Police rushed to the scene to find two lifeless bodies. Brigadier Daniel Justin Ashore is the South Sudan National Police Service spokesman.
We took the dead bodies to the Juba Teaching Hospital, and now we launch an investigation, and a case is open in Gumbo Police Station. He is one of our officers police soldier in belongs to Operation Directorate, and of course the investigation will give us more about exactly what is behind the whole accident. Yeah.
Eyewitnesses say the man walked into a vegetable market in Juba's Shirkat neighborhood and shot his wife, who was selling vegetables at the market. Adia Rose was selling vegetables a few feet away from where the couple died. Still shaken, Rose struggled to describe what happened. Speaking in Arabic, she says traders were surprised by the incident.
This man came from behind and shot 7 bullets into the air. I jumped to pick up my children. He shot 1 bullet on the ground, just in front of me and I ducked down. He raised his face up and saw his wife. He turned the gun to his wife and shot her. He shot her again and again, and she died. After that, he kneeled down and pointed the gun under his jaw and shot himself, and he died.
Betty Sony, a neighbor of the dead couple, says there was no peace between the husband and wife. Speaking in Arabic, Betty claims she was told couples made death threats.
We heard from their children that their father and mother fought last night. The wife was telling the husband to kill her, and the man was also telling the wife to kill him.
The dead couple left behind 5 children, including a 9-month-old baby. Last year, another policeman in Juba carried out a murder-suicide in a bakery where he worked. Daniel Justin says the number of cases of suicide is on the rise among members of the organized forces.
We have a lot of cases of suicide, but up to now we have not reached a concrete reason where we can say this phenomenon is because of this and this.
Justin claims economic hardships facing many families across the country is among the main causes of people killing other people and committing suicide. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan's food insecurity reaches an alarming level. Find out more when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you agree with the way your society assigns roles to men and women?
Mostly it's men that do the work, but also women are also given responsibilities. But I'll say it's not fair because they have put women in a lot of pressure. They take us like we're not significant. Why we are significant?
Yeah, I agree to the way our society assigns roles to men and women. As you can see, we have top officials who are females in government departments. Even we have our ministers who are females.
Women in our country also, they don't have jobs because men, they occupy many jobs, even the government. The government forces, what they did there, majority is their men.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. One veteran U.S. journalist thinks the media could do a better job in making sure stories from countries like South Sudan make the news. Ayen Deng Bio reports that call might require journalists to think of new business models and new ways of telling stories.
What happens in Washington has the potential to directly affect the entire world, according to New York Times journalist Nicholas Kristof.
And I mean, it's true that indeed some of the most consequential decisions in the world are going to be made in Washington over the next few years. And so, indeed, there is some reason to refocus our attentions to some degree to Washington. But we can't exclude the rest of the world.
The 2-time Pulitzer Prize winner, who writes op-ed columns that appear twice a week in the New York Times, says the 4-year conflict in South Sudan is one example of Washington's global reach.
South Sudan, nightmare of bad governance, one in which we played a certain role in creating that mess. I think it's a lot more Salva Kiir's fault than Barack Obama's, but we have our fingerprints all over South Sudan.
When asked by the moderator of a recent event at the Center for Global Development in Washington, Kristof said South Sudan and Yemen are countries that no one is paying attention to, that people should pay attention to. He adds, the Central African Republic and the Democratic Republic of Congo are often underreported by international media houses and cable news networks as well. One challenge, says Kristof, is that storytellers tend to focus overwhelmingly on the issues, sometimes ignoring the progress that's been made.
It's very understandable that people, you know, whether journalists, aid groups, are just so frustrated about the possibilities to save lives. We can just get more resources that we talk about. You know, people die, you know, 5 million kids dying unnecessarily each year before the age of 5. But if we just talk about the failures and the gaps, then I think we leave the public with a sense that global poverty is hopeless. And you see these surveys where 90% of Americans believe that global poverty has worsened or stayed the same over the last few decades. And, I mean, that is just crazy. There's been no greater global success in that period than the strides against global poverty.
Christoph says journalists have to figure out better ways of framing the issues so that progress is acknowledged. He also says journalists need to figure out new creative ways to tell stories.
I do think it's worth also putting more emphasis on the storytelling, on the outcomes. And I think that will also be more important for aid groups, because I think that I think we in the media are going to be dropping the ball a lot more in the next 10 years on covering these issues. And so that means that they're not going to be, you know, they're basically not going to be covered, I think, and so, unless we figure out new business models for coverage of these issues.
Fresh from a reporting trip to the Central African Republic, Christoph is trying to do his part in ensuring that typically underreported stories make the news. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
The Norwegian Refugee Council is sounding alarm bells on South Sudan's food crisis levels, calling it shocking. The group's country director in South Sudan, Rehana Zawar, says the threat of famine is more widespread and that tens of thousands of families are at risk of starvation this year. An estimated 6.3 million people, or half of the population, currently face worsening food security levels. That number will likely increase by another 1 million in the next 3 months, according to the latest projections. The Norwegian Refugee Council's statement released today says the impact of 4 years of fighting, destruction of food production, cattle being stolen or left behind, farmers being afraid to access their farmlands, high inflation due to economic crisis is to blame for the looming famine. Zawar says her office is working to deliver life-saving aid to devastated areas, but needs are still overwhelming. The group is asking for increased international support and resources for humanitarian aids, as well as free access to reach families in need. Ethiopia is appealing for $1.6 billion to provide emergency and long-term aid for around 8 million people affected by drought, floods, and conflict. Lisa Schlein reports from the United Nations in Geneva, where UN officials presented their humanitarian disaster resilient plan.
Ethiopia is emerging from 3 consecutive years of drought in a perilous state. Among those hardest hit are some 2.4 million pastoralists who have lost 80% of their livestock. UN resident and humanitarian coordinator in Ethiopia, Ahuna Eziakonwa-Enochi, tells VOA herders depend upon the meat and milk from their animals to feed their families.
So we're estimating in this year that we will see about 3.5 million children who suffer from moderate acute malnutrition and just over 300,000 who have to face severe acute malnutrition.
Eziakonwa-Enochi warns children who are severely acutely malnourished are at risk of dying if they do not urgently receive special nutritional feeding.
Time is of the essence. Unless we're able to catch them early, we end up having more kids crossing into that red zone of severe acute malnutrition. That's what we're absolutely determined to avoid this year. And that's why we're asking for these resources now, because it's totally preventable.
Other vulnerable people include 1.7 million, the United Nations says, are displaced by drought, and those displaced by conflict in the border areas of the Oromia and Somali regions. They will need to be relocated to areas where there is water so they can restock their animals or pursue other livelihood opportunities. In parallel with the emergency needs, Eziakonwa-Enochi says, the Ethiopian plan aims to build resilience so the nation can better deal with disasters before they strike. For example, she says the government and humanitarian partners are considering digging boreholes in the lowlands. This would make water available for people and their animals when rain is scarce and drought appears on the horizon. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on humanitarian affairs, the wave of ethnic violence sweeping through northeastern Democratic Republic of Congo has forced tens of thousands of people from their homes. Nearly 50,000 have crossed into Uganda. For VOA, Halima Athumani reports from Sebagoro landing site in western Uganda.
The waters of Lake Albert look beautiful and even inviting, but they can also be dangerous. The UN says several Congolese refugees have died this year, making the five-hour crossing to Uganda in rickety boats. More continue to arrive every day. They are fleeing communal violence in Congo's Ituri province. Tam Daniel Rogers is a UNHCR field officer at Sebagoro landing site.
And some are even taking cattle, like goats, like chicken, like cows. So one of the boats that capsized was apparently carrying 27 cows. All the cows died, but the human beings were rescued.
Many of the refugees VOA saw arrive came with few belongings. Many are searching for lost children and loved ones. Dunia Sikwetu Sorongani has not seen his wife in a month. He says when the attackers came, they came in the night and killed many youth who were in the neighborhood. I was inside the gate and heard cries outside. When I got out to check, I found all my neighbors had been killed with machetes. I was forced to run. At Sebagoro landing site, volunteers call for the new arrivals to line up to board the bus. There is pushing. The refugees say they are exhausted. Tit-for-tat conflict between the Hema and Lendu communities in the Ituri province of DRC has simmered for decades, often over land. Survivors say, unlike in the past, they were given no warning of recent attacks, and women are not spared. Refugee Chantal Love says they burned my house and all my belongings, so we had to run empty-handed. Even the clothes I am wearing now were given to me by Good Samaritans at the border. She got away with her two children. Her parents and other family members were killed. In the span of 3 days in mid-March, the UN Refugee Agency said 4,000 people from Ituri crossed into Uganda. The new arrivals eventually make their way to the Changwali refugee settlement, many still coming to grips with the violence they fled. Refugee Kaigwa Sher says, I've heard on the radio the Lendu saying they are our brothers. But why is it that when those people come and start cutting people with machetes, arrows, spears and axes, why is it the soldiers don't retaliate? Why? That surprises me. If it's politics, we don't know. The reception center in Kagoma has grown overcrowded. Changwali authorities fear for another outbreak of cholera. In February, more than 600 refugees were infected and 26 died. Now the Uganda Red Cross is taking no chances. But even with such reminders, Red Cross volunteers say they struggle to enforce hand-washing rules. Since 2016, Uganda has taken in more than 1 million refugees from South Sudan, seriously straining resources. Amid the steady influx this year from Congo, Ugandan authorities only know too well that they need urgent donor support. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Changwali, Uganda.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. The South Sudan government spokesman says new U.S. restrictions on companies that do business with South Sudanese oil entities will further weaken the Kiir administration and is meant to make the government fail. Government Information Minister Michael McQuay reiterated his accusation that the Trump administration wants a regime change in Juba. McQuay says despite the restrictions, restrictions, the government will survive. The companies listed include the state-owned Nile Petroleum Corporation, Dar Petroleum Operating Company, and Oil and Gas Consortium, led by Chinese and Malaysian state-run companies. And the restrictions also cover oil distributor Niakek and Sun's Juba Petrotech Technical Services and Sun Petroleum Operating Company. The Ministry of Petroleum and the Ministry of Mining are also on the list. South Sudanese civil society activists say the trade restrictions should serve as a wake-up call for the government to immediately end the war through peaceful means. Activists say the Kiir administration should have been using oil revenues to improve service delivery to its citizens rather than using it to buy weapons. Flora Francis with the local NGO Organization for Nonviolence and Development says the U.S. government placed restrictions on 15 oil-related entities in South Sudan to pressure the government into ending the war. She adds that people are suffering, the suffering must stop. And finally, a police officer in Juba shot and killed his wife, then turned the gun on himself. Police say they're investigating the cause of the murder-suicide at a market in Juba's Gumbo suburb. Eyewitnesses say the policeman walked into a vegetable market in Juba's Sharkat neighborhood and shot his wife several times at close range. Betty Soni, a neighbor of the dead couple, says they often fought and that both of them made death threats to each other. The dead couple left behind five children, including a nine-month-old baby. And that is a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Tengama by Fabregas.
L'enjaillement ne finit pas. DJ Police, ça c'est la nouvelle danse congolaise. La danse d'à côté, Mama Tengamae. Sorti Mama.
We've been listening to Fabregas with the song Tengama. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Let's know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Remember to be here again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Charlotte,